Welcome to Christian Historical Fiction Talk. I'm your host, author Liz Tolsma. I'm so glad that you could join us for this episode, because if it is happening in the world of Christian historical fiction, you know that it is happening right here. I am super excited to introduce you to today's guest. Stefina McGee is with us today. She is here by special request. This is why you should be following Christian Historical Fiction Talk on social media, because several months ago, actually, I went on there and I asked you, the listeners, who you would like to have come on and who you would like to have me interview. And I'm going to be interacting more and more like that and letting you have more and more input into the podcast. And I might even start asking you some questions that you would like to have me ask some of the authors that I'm going to be interviewing. So watch out for that. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and keep your eyes open. So Stefina is here by special request, and I am so sorry, I cannot remember who requested this interview, but to whoever did, thank you, because you're going to find out this is a great interview and a lot of fun. And if you would like to find out more about Stefina and about her books, then please make sure that you hop over to the show notes, which are on my website at liztolsma.com, and you can find that information there, as well as links to some of the books that she's going to be talking about here. So be sure to do that and stop and leave a comment about the podcast too. I'd love to know your thoughts. Okay, time to get to Stefina. She's going to introduce herself a little bit more, but she is the best-selling and an award-winning author of Christian novels. She writes stories of faith, hope, and healing, usually set in the Deep South, but the series that we're going to be talking about today is a little bit different, and she'll be telling you about that. When she's not twirling around in hoop skirts, reading, or sipping sweet tea on the front porch, she's a homeschool mom of two boys, a writer, a dreamer, and a husband spoiler. Lucky man. Please help me in welcoming to the podcast today, Stefina McGee. Welcome to the show, Stefina. It's so good to have you with us today.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
I have to admit that you're a new-to-me author. You were recommended by one of our listeners as someone who wants to come on the show, and I'm really intrigued by you and your books. But why don't we just start off with having you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Hi, everyone. I'm Stefina McGee. I have been writing for about 10 years now. I'm a bit of an oddball because I have a lot of historical fiction, I have one contemporary, and then I have decided to try my hand at time travel.
And that time travel is just so intriguing. We were talking off air before we came on about Jody Headland, who has tried some time travel and been quite successful with it. So it really intrigues me, and I like it better than I thought that I would. Can you tell us a little bit about your latest release, A Castle for Christmas?
Yeah, so I started this series because I had this idea. Okay, I'm always researching history for my books, and I keep thinking, what would it be like if I got dropped into one of these eras that I write about? And so this is actually the fourth book in the series, but it can be read completely standalone. And in each of the books, the character or characters, they go to this Victorian inn. And when they check into their room, there's some sort of object in their room that when they touch it, they get sent back in time. And in her case, she is sent to a castle in 1356 in Kent, England. And bless her heart, she thinks she's dreaming. So she wakes up and she's in this princess dress and she has on this crown and she's like, oh boy, I'm dreaming about being a princess. And she has CJD, which I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce, but it is a brain condition. So she thinks, oh yeah, it was one of my symptoms. I'm getting these very vivid dreams and I'm just going to go with it. So the steward comes out and he says, oh, my lady. And she says, yes, I'm here for the ball. And he takes her inside and she's like, oh, of course I want to see the Baron and dance with the Baron. And he happens to be looking for a bride because he needs the dowry for his barony and his people. And so it's not going to give anything away. He says, okay, marriage of convenience here. I need your dowry. You need protection because you're all alone. So let's get married. And she still thinks she's dreaming. So she goes, yeah, let's do that. And as you can imagine, that causes a whole lot of trouble as the story goes on.
I can imagine, because my guess is that she's not dreaming, that you call it time travel, and that would be quite the dilemma to have then, to find yourself married in a different time period.
Yeah. So she's at one point, she goes, wait a minute, I'm in the past, there's no way home, and I'm engaged to a Baron?
Not a horrible, horrible problem to have, though.
No, not too terrible.
So I know this, you said, is the fourth book in this series, and the series is called Back in Time, in spelled I-N-N, which I assume refers to this bed and breakfast that you referenced.
Yes.
And they go back to different time periods, and we'll talk about the others in a minute, but this one goes back to 1356 in Kent, like you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Why pick the medieval time period to send your character back to?
Well, I liked having these objects, and I happen to have, from my great-grandmother, this big framed map of Kent, England, and it has the family lineage. And it has the royal family line on one side, and there's this little star. And then you go over to the other side, and there's a little star. And it is her family lineage and how it ties into the royal family. And so I said, oh, well, that would be cool for one of my time travel people. And I got to looking at it, and I was like, hey, look, there's some barons over here. And then I thought, oh, well, that would be fun. You know, who wouldn't like to get to go to a castle? And I was thinking about a Christmas story, and I thought, ooh, well, that would be a lot of fun. So it actually comes from my own family lineage, my little chart that she had, which I use in the story. So it's pretty cool.
Well, that's really cool that you are related to royalty.
A long way distant.
I think a lot of people with English heritage are. Yeah. My husband has Scottish heritage, and he is related to the Scottish kings. But like you said, way, 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 way back.
I don't think it counts. I'm so far removed.
I know. It's like 10 million people would have to die before my husband would ever become king of England or anything.
Yeah. And if we're in that kind of part, you know, we've got bigger problems than that.
Right. That's for sure. So why did you decide to do time travel as opposed to, say, dual timeline, which is also really popular right now?
Well, I always do a lot of research, and I keep thinking, well, wouldn't it be cool if I could just show up in the past and watch and see and see what life was really like? And then I got to thinking, well, if I really did go in the past, how weird would it be for me as a modern woman with my own modern sensibilities, and I'm used to air conditioning and running water? And I would get to laugh, and I think, well, it'd be kind of funny. So I started this idea of the characters going back in time to experience what it would be like. And I think for historical readers, they might think that too. You know, what would it be like for me to go back to this era that I always like to read about, and what would be the problems? So it kind of created this fun little idea. It was something new I wanted to try, and I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, living without air conditioning might be kind of hard for me, and running water would be really, really hard for me, I think.
Mm-hmm. I asked my readers, I have a faithful readers group, and I asked them, I said, okay, if you went back to the past, what would you miss the most? And like 90% of them said the bathroom, like showers, toilets, running water. Like they could do without the air conditioning, but That modern bathroom was a must-have.
Right. That's for sure. We were talking off air about how the Christian market would respond to time travel. And you mentioned that you put something at the beginning of each of your books to sort of help them get over that hump, that sort of mental barrier that we seem to have about time travel. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, in the beginning of each of these books, I have a dear reader letter. And I kind of tell them what I just told you about. I always thought it would be cool to see these eras. And so I tell them, you know, keep in mind that this is a story. It's not meant to have any sort of theological debate about whether or not God would grant a miracle of time travel. I mean, I suppose he could. He can do everything. But it's not a debate over whether or not he could or would or whatever. And then the Bible tells us in Job and again in Psalms that my times are in your hands and man's days are determined, but that we can suspend what we know to enjoy our imagination and the fictional freedom of the what if. What if I did this? What would it be like? And while we know that it is not true, it's just fun to experience in that suspension of disbelief.
Exactly. I think that's really true. And I think that's what fiction is all about, is exploring the almost unbelievable sometimes. And it can work, I think, definitely. Tell us a little bit about your other Back in Time books. There's three others, right?
Yes. So the first one is A Wagon Train Weekend. And we have a couple who is on the verge. He's about to propose. They're having a big fight. They get a flat tire and they go to this inn. And all of a sudden, they get sent back to the Oregon Trail on a wagon train. And so the story and the sort of spiritual thread there is really getting to know each other under difficult circumstances, really understanding how their faith plays into their relationship. And then in the second book, the girl thinks that her grandparents have this magical fantasy-like romance. And she said, well, I can't find anything like that in modern times. And it would be great if I could just see how their romance went. And so she goes back to the 1950s and she gets to meet her grandmother when she was young. And so there's a whole lot in that one. You have two people who've never met. They both go back in time at the same time. And they kind of don't realize that they're both there. And then the third, and that one's called Falling for the 50s. And the third book is called A Colonial Courtship. And they go back to Boston right before the Tea Party.
Well, that's really interesting that you would pick four such different and varied time periods, all the way from 1356 to 1956.
Yeah, it kind of gave me a lot of freedom. A lot of my historical books have all been the American South. They're all in the 1800s. And this gave me an opportunity to try some different things that I've always been interested in and some different eras that I wanted to look into. So I enjoyed the research and kind of getting a chance to explore some different things. And because of the theme of the series where, you know, it depends on the characters and what kind of time period is going to give them the most character growth, it allowed me to try a lot of different places for them to go.
So which do you like best? Do you like the American South in the 1800s, or do you like one of these other time periods that you've gotten to explore?
Ooh, that's a hard question. I still really like the American 1800s, that kind of Victorian era, I think is still my favorite. But I have to say, I had so much fun with the medieval and the castle and the knights and all of that kind of stuff. It was very different, kind of out of my wheelhouse, but it was a lot of fun.
I'm sure it was. And that was definitely a romantic sort of time. Like you said, all the knights in shining armor and everything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some neat stuff. It's perfect for Christmas.
Yes, I agree. And so I'm assuming that they celebrate Christmas in the book there somewhere?
They do, but I don't want to give away too much about what they do.
Okay. But it must have been interesting researching what Christmas was like in the 1300s.
It was, because there wasn't a whole lot of in the way that we think of it. So there's no, let's put up our Christmas tree right after Thanksgiving, of course, because there was no Thanksgiving. And then they would celebrate starting Christmas Eve and then the 12, you know, the 12 nights of Christmas going that way. But for them, there wasn't, I don't know, a lot of the stuff that was different than it is for us. So it was interesting, all their different traditions, which is mostly like a feast. Sometimes they would have their, all their castle folks join them for their feast, which I thought was pretty neat. But no Christmas trees.
That would be kind of a bummer. I think I would miss that. Maybe your main character will have to introduce Christmas trees.
She does, and she has requested this tree to come in, and the knights are all like, you want us to cut a tree and bring it inside the castle?
Oh, that's great. That's great. I like that. I really like that. Now, talking about some of your earlier books that are set in the American South in the 1800s, and I read your bio and it said you love twirling about in hoop skirts. Yeah. I'm assuming then that you love dressing up.
I do. It's actually kind of funny because my mother has a photography company and she does historical photos for book covers. And so we have an excessive amount of costumes because we like buying them. And we do all these photo shoots. And so I have all of these dresses. And I'm also a member of the DAR, Daughters of the American Revolution. And our chapter is Fort Rosalie in Natchez. And in Natchez, Mississippi, every spring and fall, they do what they call the pilgrimage. And they open up all these old historical homes. And the people will dress in period attire and give tours. Well, since Fort Rosalie is owned by the DAR, I, of course, had to be one of those girls who put on the big dress and had the hoops and helped do the tours through the house. And I have a lot of fun with that kind of stuff. So, and I have worn those dresses. Oh, my goodness. I once managed to pack a full petticoat, hoop skirt, and gown into a carry-on suitcase and fly to Cincinnati, Ohio for the Christian Fiction Readers Retreat and wear this giant dress to the genre thing.
Oh my. That must have been a feat to do that.
Yeah, they all kept saying, how did you get that here? I said, well, I'm not entirely sure, and I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to get it home. Right.
Well, I can't blame you for wanting to dress up. I had a hoop skirt for my wedding gown because I wanted the big skirt. I wanted to wear that at least once. So
yeah, it's fun.
It is.
And it immediately makes you a little girl again because as soon as you put it on, you can't help but do the little twirly thing.
Exactly. Exactly. You got that right. I think that appeals to most of our historical listeners. They would love to dress up as somebody else from a different time period like that. What do you think it is about your stories that makes them so unique?
Well, a lot of my readers tell me that a strength that I have is my settings. And they always say that they really feel like they're there in the story, that they can see the places that they're visiting. And for historical fiction, I think that matters a lot, being able to really feel like you're in that time and place. So I think that's something that benefits with all of my research, that I'm kind of able to build that world so that you can really feel like you've stepped into a different time.
Yeah, I think that's really important, like you said, to get that setting right, to make that story feel historical. You seem to really like meeting people. Like I said, I was on your website and you speak and you do all this with the DAR and all that kind of stuff. You've been on the radio and on TV. Is that something that you enjoy and why do you enjoy that so much?
Well, I love book people. That's my people. And a lot of times we only get to interact with each other online. We usually live far away. So anytime I get an opportunity to meet somebody and we get to talk about books and enjoy things that we have in common, I find that a lot of fun. I'm actually an introvert by nature. So most of my days are spent at my desk in my office by myself. So, you know, sometimes it's great to get out there and get a chance to talk to other book lovers and talk about books and kind of get that interaction with your like folks.
I agree. That's one reason why I do this podcast, so that even though I'm still down here in my office behind my computer, at least I get to talk to somebody else who loves history and loves books as much as I do.
Yeah. Kindred spirits.
That's right. There you go. That's what Anne Shirley would say for sure. What is up next for you?
I have contracted with Revell. So I just turned in a story to them. Oh, I have a title. They said I can share it now. So it's called The Secrets of Emberwild. And it is a horse story set in Mississippi in the early 1900s. I'm really excited about that. And then I am currently working on book two for them, which is due in May. And I'm not sure how much about that one I'm allowed to say yet.
Okay. Well, that's great. We're going to really be looking forward to that one. And it's another different time period for you than early 1900s.
Yes, it is. This one didn't require quite as much research for me, actually, because it is a story about a girl who wants to be a horse trainer, of course, in a time when that's for men, and she does harness racing. And I actually have a degree in equine sciences, animal sciences, from Mississippi State University, and I was a horse trainer until I tore my back out, and my back doctor said, not anymore, you're not.
Oh, no.
So I was able to take a lot of that I had done personally and that experience and my love of horses and kind of pour that into this book, which was a lot of fun.
So is that what propelled you into writing then, when you could no longer train horses?
Yes and no. I think, you know, sometimes God has different plans than we do. I would tell my husband, we got married between our freshman and sophomore year at college, and I would always tell him about these story ideas I had when we would drive home to see his family. And he said, you really need to write these down. And I was like, nah, it's just something I do for fun. Things I come up with. He stopped at a gas station and he bought a spiral bound notebook. And he said, no, honey, you're going to write these down. And so I have been writing these ideas and I have been working on it and I really loved it. And he said, why don't you switch and be an English major? And I said, because I'm almost done and I'm ready to be done with college. I'm going to finish my degree. And lo and behold, I only made it 2 years out of college doing the horse training before that was the end of that. And he said, you know, you really loved that writing thing. I was like, yeah, I really do love it. He said, now might be a good time to work on that. I said, yeah, maybe so. I guess God has some different plans. So I started taking classes and learning and kind of really digging into what the craft was like, because, you know, back then I thought, oh, I can just sit down at my computer and look, a story will come out. And that's not really how that works.
No, unfortunately not.
So I had to learn all of the stuff, all of the craft. So I spent a good bit of time doing that. But I absolutely love it. And I just can't even picture doing anything else now. So God's plans are always the best.
There you go. If our listeners would like to connect with you, where can they go to find out more about you and about your books?
My website is stephenamcgee.com, which is STEPHENIAMCGEE. I keep up with all of my events and where I'm going to be and what I'm working on there. I also have a cool little chart that shows you how far along I am on each of the books I'm working on. And then I'm usually on Facebook. I tend to be there probably more than I should be. But I have a Stephena McGee's Faithful Readers team. And that's where I like to ask readers questions and get their input for story ideas. And I think last week they got to name a couple of side characters for me. And so that's where I like to hang out.
Lots of fun. Do you have any last words for the listeners?
Well, thank you for coming and listening to me ramble on about hoop skirts and girls in crowns and all my strange things that I do. So it's been a lot of fun. Yeah, thanks for listening to me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really have appreciated it. It's been a lot of fun and we look forward to having you back again someday very soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Well, didn't we have a lot of fun with Stephena? It was great to have her with us. Thank you so much to the person on social media who suggested that we have her come on the program with us. It was a fantastic suggestion, and I will be asking for more like that. You have introduced me to a new author, and I appreciate that so much. Remember that you can find the show notes for today's program over at my website, which is liztolsma.com. Just click on the podcasting tab if you don't see this right there on the front page, and it will take you to this episode and all the episodes of Christian Historical Fiction Talk. We have an outstanding guest coming on with us next week. It is someone who I have been working with my entire career. She was in the same novella collection that I was when I first started out, and that is the fantastic Erica Vetch. She will tell you a little bit about herself when she is on with us next week, but we're going to be talking about her book, The Debutante's Code. She calls this Jane Austen meets Sherlock Holmes in a new Regency mystery series. Newly returned from finishing school, Lady Juliet Thorndike is ready to debut in London society. Due to her years away, she hasn't spent much time with her parents and sees them only as the flighty, dilettante couple the other nobles love. But when they disappear, she discovers she never really knew them at all. They've been living double lives as government spies, and they're only the latest in a long history of espionage that is the family's legacy. Now, Lady Juliet is determined to continue their work. Mentored by her uncle, she plunges into the dangerous world of spycraft. From the glittering ballrooms of London to the fox hunts, regattas, and soirees of country high society, she must chase down hidden clues, solve the mysterious code her parents left behind, and stay out of danger. All the while, she has to keep her endeavors a secret from her best friend and her suitors, not to mention nosy, irritatingly handsome Bow Street runner Daniel Swan, who suspects her of a daring theft. Can Lady Juliet outwit her enemies and complete her parents' last mission, or will it lead her to a terrible end? Erica Vetch is back with a rollicking, exciting new series destined to be a hit with Regency readers who enjoy a touch of mystery in their love stories. Absolutely fabulous. Erica never disappoints, and she is a queen when it comes to Regency. So if you are a fan of Regency, if you're a fan of any historical, really, Regency is fabulous. You'll want to be here next week for our chat with Erica Vetch. Once again, I want to thank you all so much for tuning in and spending some time with us. And I also want to thank you for recommending Christian Historical Fiction Talk to all of your reader friends and to all of your history buff friends. Tell one person and tell them to keep passing it on so the podcast continues to grow and we can continue having these great guests and these wonderful topics. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week.